right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Memorial Day Monday. And yes, big thanks, troops, those who have defended us, given the ultimate sacrifice, their families as well, definitely on a day like today. Thoughts and prayers, no doubt, and a chance to reflect on that. Good to be with all of you on a Monday morning. Appreciate those of you who are up with us here listening today. Here was Rob Ninkovich, former New England Patriot. He was with the Patriots back when Cole Popovich was an assistant coach there. Dante Scarnecchia was the legendary O-line coach in New England at the time, and Cole Popovich was, I guess, sort of his pupil, kind of a coach coaching underneath Dante Scarnecchia. Here's Rob Ninkovich, very complimentary of the Texans' newly promoted offensive line coach.
They had a great assistant coach under Scarnecchia, right? That's Cole Popovich, right? He was the assistant offensive line coach who was here, who in the last 3 years, he left because the whole COVID thing and the mandated. He didn't get vaccinated.
Oh.
Okay.
Right? So if you didn't, because it was a league mandated thing, it wasn't just, hey, the Patriots. It was a league thing. All the coaches and staff had to have it. Well, he didn't feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So he.
Smart man.
Left.
So he left.
He left. So then after he leaves, you bring in somebody else and you've had some issues at the offensive line. You bring in another guy that used to play here. But maybe you had one of the best coaches right there.
Who was with Dante for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. And then he had to leave because
So then it's not really about the talent you have, because if you can get a good coach like Scarnecchia, who basically got Steve Nail off of a wrestling mat and turned him into a great player.
Well, it's a good balance between having a great coach and understanding how do I get the most out of each player.
All right, so there you go. Rob Ninkovich, very complimentary of Cole Popovich right there.
So the thing that people bring up immediately, and understandably so, when we talk about Cole Popovich is, hey, he was the assistant offensive line coach last year. How is he going to fix things? I've brought up from personal experience, I've seen situations where there were assistant position coaches who were much better than the actual coach, the assistant coach. And there's only so much you can do. Like, there's just, you're not running the show. It's, you know, like any other organization, you're not the guy in charge. That you can be really, really good at what you do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to, you know, change everything for the better.
Yep.
And, you know, one of those guys at one point, Steve Marshall was a assistant offensive line coach in 2005 when we were 2-14. And I thought he was a good coach, and it was, there were a lot of other things wrong with the offense that year systemically that kept him from being as good as he could be. But he went on to, he might still be coaching today, you know, coach for another 20 years in the NFL. So you can't hold it against him that he was part of that bad effort last year, because I don't know how much he actually had a say in.
For that example you just brought up of the coach that you experienced, what did you see in him that told you, like, that he was a good coach? Like, what traits does somebody like that have, especially on a bad team?
I could just see them. I could see him, that he knew what he was talking about on the technique side of things, and I saw him working with guys. And then I think some of it was just in conversation with other offensive linemen, you know, about how the guy knows what he's doing, or he's helped him out and everything.
Yep. That audio, by the way, was on the Greg Hill Show up on WEEI, our sister station up in Boston. Yeah.
Tell you who thinks a lot of Steve Marshall, the offensive line coach, Sean.
Who?
One, Deion Sanders, because Steve Marshall's the O-line coach at
Colorado?
Colorado.
No kidding. Oh, that's cool. Oh, boy, I wonder what that's like.
It was a talent issue, not a coaching issue last year. Damn it, Sean.
Yeah.
It was not. I'll not have you drag Steve Marshall's name through the mud.
No. I hadn't even thought about the fact that the offensive line was a scapegoat. I'm just talking about coaching for Deion. Like, that's got to be a crazy experience up there doing that. Jonathan Alexander, speaking of the offensive line, Jonathan Alexander of the Chronicle did a piece on Ariante Ursary this weekend, the offensive lineman that the Texans drafted out of Minnesota in the second round. Seth and I were playing a little guessing game last week because we had seen the clips from Forged in Foxborough, which is the Patriots' internal documentary about the offseason, which included some immersive war room video where you could hear everything pretty much. Not great audio for the radio. The quality wasn't great. But you could definitely hear that the Bears were trying to trade up with the Patriots to move up to the 38th pick in the draft. And the Texans were trying to move up from 58 to 38 as well. The Patriots were fielding offers for that pick. ultimately, according to this article from Jonathan, they decided he implies in his article is the Patriots who opted out of the deal and walked away from it.
Yeah,
It was hard to tell
watching
from the
video. It was confusing. It looked to me in watching the video that it might have been Houston that said they were out, but regardless, however it might be, it ended up, as Jonathan Alexander reported, and he was the first to report anything like this, that the Texans, if they had traded successfully, would have taken Arianti Ursary,
yep,
who they would ultimately draft 10 picks later.
Yeah.
So you can look at it both ways. You can look at it as, oh man, that's the guy they really wanted and they ended up getting it. Or you could also say, well, yeah, but what the hell were they doing even just trying to trade up to 38 when they could have gotten him at 48?
Yeah.
I tend to excuse that second part because you just flat out never know when a guy's going to be available.
Sure.
I think that Caserio could have drafted or traded up more aggressively at some point. They just waited until they had the right deal in place. So it wasn't like it was come hell or high water,
yep,
we're going to trade for Arianti Ursary. He bid his time, and he ended up getting an extra third-round pick out of it that they would have traded away if
it only cost them one third-round pick, whereas moving up to 38 from 58 would have cost them two third-round picks. It would have cost them the exact picks that they used on Jalen Knoll, and then it would have that pick, and then the pick from the third round next year. That's what they used to go get Woody Marks the next day. So, in a way, you know, you're looking at maybe they find a way to get both those guys anyways, but you got to give up more picks to do it or whatever. But we do know that the 79th pick, which was going to be part of that deal to move up to 38, they did end up using on Jalen Knoll, and that next year's third round pick was at least part of what they used to go get Woody Marks. So they were able to. We got to see how these guys work out, but like they were pretty fortunate that deal didn't work out. You know,
they were fortunate that deal didn't work out, and you never have a full accounting of the deals that didn't work out. I think the one immediately that a couple people brought up to me when I was kind of just saw this while I was on a live stream was, well, yeah, the one that you wish wouldn't have worked out was when they traded back in the Kenyon Green draft.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? And now, if they had been unable to trade back, would they have taken Kyle Hamilton instead of Kenyon Green?
Yeah.
I don't know. That would have been a better move
if
that deal hadn't worked out and they selected Kyle Hamilton.
They were 13. They let the Eagles flip-flop with them 15 and 13, and Jordan Davis goes 13, Kyle Hamilton goes 14 to the Ravens, and then Kenyon Green goes to the Texans at 15. Yeah. Yeah, they were the ones. It did feel like Kenyon Green just kind of, they like three guys right there, and we'll just take whichever one's left over. That's
whichever
what it felt
guy.
Like.
When Nick talks about bands of players,
correct,
that feels like, okay, we've got these three guys graded equally, and we're still in this band, and yeah, that's who we'll take. There's almost no way I can't look at that as just a huge mistake by the organization. Whether the deal worked out or whether it didn't, even having Kenyon Green graded the same as Kyle Hamilton, obviously that was a... That was a miss.
No, that was. Yeah. I mean, that was a miss, and the misses happen. You know, that's the way it goes.
I feel better about Arianti Ursary, just given that they really like this guy that much. But I kind of feel bad for Arianti Ursary, who has to find out like, oh, I could have. Hey, I yeah.
Oh,
don't get me wrong. I appreciate this big load of money I'm about to get.
Yeah,
but it would have been even more money 10 picks earlier.
It's definitely like hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, that high in the draft, relatively speaking, you know, compared to the day three guys, that's a lot of money, man. 10 slots, that's a lot of money. Who is more crazy, Olivia Munn or Aaron Rodgers, a texter asks. I don't know Olivia Munn's, not only do I not know her reputation, I can only name one thing that I know she was in, and it was The Newsroom, which was one of the most annoying shows of all time. I hated
that show. She was in that show?
She was in News.
I hated that show.
Did you see the... Are you being serious right now? Or are you...
Being serious.
Okay.
I watched like two episodes of it.
It's
it
horrible.
Those, is that Aaron Sorkin?
Yes.
All those Aaron Sorkin shows. Like, nobody talks the way human beings actually talk.
No, it's those cute
Everybody's
dialogue.
Walking around giving dramatic speeches all the time.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Or jokes that are back and forth jokes that would obviously have to be scripted to play out that way. They have seven of them every single show.
That's the worst thing about movies is that the sick burn. A lot of times in a movie, you get somebody ends a conversation with a sick burn.
Yeah.
And you're like, it wasn't that sick a burn.
Right.
And in real life, that other person could come back with something immediately.
Yeah. No, dude. Sorkin. I watched a full season of it, and I started realizing by like the sixth or seventh episode, I'm like, nobody talks like this. This is unrealistic. Yeah. Like, people do not converse like, it's rough. Yes, it is rough. So she was in that. So by proxy, she's more crazy than Aaron Rodgers for taking a paycheck to be on a show where she had to listen and be part of that dialogue all the time. She's crazier. Mm-hmm. That's what I say. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast. Let's circle back to the Astros. All right, the Astros went 10-7 during this 17-game stretch where they didn't have a single day off. They have a day off today. Finally, what did we learn about this team during the 17-game stretch? We will discuss that coming back.